Hello, this is George Kaywood from Handicapping.com. Welcome to this podcast, which is the third in a four-part series featuring Hall of Fame trainer Jack Van Berg. In January 2010, Jack was the featured guest at the Pick More Winners Handicapping Seminar Series, hosted by Mike Kratville and Johnny Ray Gomez at Horseman's Park in Omaha, Nebraska. I arranged to record the session to preserve Jack's talk and present it for all horse racing fans to hear via podcasts on Handicapping.com. So special thanks to Horseman's Park. It's one of the best simulcast facilities in the United States and features several days of live racing every summer that are fun and exciting. Be sure to take a look at their website at www.horsemanspark.com. Horseman's is spelled H-O-R-S-E-M-E-N-S. On this podcast, Jack Van Berg talks about workouts and shipping horses to different tracks, answers a question about the effect of extreme hot and cold weather on horses, answers my question on what percentage of jockeys are truly competent riders, talks about the top horsemen he's worked with and who have worked for him, racing in the Midwestern United States, and Jack even offers a little bit of philosophy on raising children. To start it off, Mike Kratville asks Jack about workouts and shippers.
Did you have a particular regimen about how far in advance of a race you wanted to do, how many works you wanted to have, the length of the works? How would you go about when you would ship a horse to get that horse ready for that big stakes race?
I learned early on in life when they sent me to New Orleans, I was leading trainer at Sportsman Park. I went in there, Dad had got sick, so I went in there and helped him. And I went to New Orleans and I was had my chest thrown out and I thought I was pretty smart. They started Thanksgiving Day and I never won a race down there till Christmas Day. Everything I run last. And it seems like when you get by water that they got to get acclimated to it. It's a whole different environment. When I went into Shreveport for the Super Derby with Gate Dancer and Ali Sheba both, I went 30 days ahead of time. But I think it's only fair to a horse if you're going to a different racetrack to get in there and train over that racetrack, give them a feel of the racetrack, and give them time. But especially if you're going by water, you go to California, you ship a horse out there, you can fly in, run him 2 days later or a day later, and get along. But then if you come in there, it'll take them another 30 days or so to get acclimated to it. So you got to give them a shot. I used to watch them guys come out of Denver out of the mountain climate into Sportsman Park in the fall, and they'd knock your socks off in there with them horses coming out of that mile-high country in there. So wherever you're going, and if you're shipping to where the mountain's high, a mile high, you better give them 30 or 40 days to get acclimated. It's only fair to the horse to get on track. The synthetic tracks, they need to work over them, especially a couple times.
All right. Thank you, Jack.
You've been telling us some great personal stories, and I love the insight that you've been giving us all, Jack, into racing. Very simple question, and I suppose you can give it a very simple answer. You've worked with so many jockeys in all of your 6,000 races and whatnot. What percentage do what you want them as a trainer to do, and what percentage are just flat-out pinheads?
95% of pinheads. I've had some good riders. I'll tell you, Larry Snyder was probably a good day-in and day-out rider that you ever put on a horse. Every horse you put him on, he tried and give you 110%. They've had a lot of trouble with P-Val, with drugs and stuff, but no matter what horse you put him on, he tries, and it's whether it's the second or third or fourth. To me, that is a good rider. A rider that, if he's not going to win the race, stops up, and you people are betting on horses, you bet a trifecta, you bet an exacta, you bet a superfecta, and that rider stands up and gets you out of your money for third and fourth money. To me, if I was a steward in the steward stand, he'd get 5 days for that. You know, they got to ride them all out. And Larry Snyder was, he would do more of what you tell him. The riders, it seems like when they come to California, after they're there for a year or so, you can't tell them anything. They know it all. And I watched him come out. I watched Darrell Picard come out there, was leading rider. Then he got into that lead switching business to make him lead. I've had horses, jocks that made horses switch leads, just get up and throw them, and they end up cracking a knee or something. A horse wants to do what they want to do. It's like you eating with your right hand, and somebody comes up and slaps you in the head and tells you to eat with your left hand. That's what a horse does when you make him switch leads. Let them do what they want to do, and they know what they want to do. But it seems like them riders, McCarg, DeSarmo, all of them come to California, and the first thing you know, they're up there standing up on them, making them switch leads at Adelaide. Those guys were leading riders, and the minute they started that, they went to the bottom of the pile.
Thank you, Jack. Jack, you mentioned that when you were young, you thought your dad was not very smart, but when you got older, you realized how smart he was. I have a 42-year-old son here with me. When can I count on him recognizing how smart I am?
Give him a few more years, I'll tell you that. No, there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, around training horse, and I've had kids. Frankie Brothers, he was with me 9 years, started out as a hot walker. His dad sent him to me because they couldn't handle him. He was showing horses and show rings and stuff, and they just couldn't handle him. And Charlie Toussette says, sent him to Jack Bamberg, and he'll straighten him out. And I finally had to tell Frankie one day, I said, Frankie, if you fire another hot walker, walks in here 5 minutes late, I'm going to put nails in the shed row, and you're going to walk barefooted, I'm telling you right now. And he was as hard-headed. He went through a stage where he'd want to scratch a horse if he thought there was a couple in there he couldn't beat. He was hard-headed for the first 3 or 4 years, and finally he come around. And when you're young, you just think you're smart. All kids are like that. My dad just worked the devil out of me. I'd come home late, and he'd get me up earlier in the morning, and then when you come home that night, he'd say, now you'll go to bed, won't you? One night he caught me coming home at 2 o'clock, and he said, what time is it? I said, I don't know. He said, I do, and the next morning I went out in a snowstorm, as cold as it is here today, snow blowing, and made me haul hay all day. I would come home that night, he said, you'll go to bed, won't you? I said, no, I'm going ice skating now. But I didn't make it about 30 minutes, and I went home and went to bed. He always said his greatest saying was, idle minds and idle hands make worthless children. So he'd keep you busy. Yes.
Do temperature extremes affect older horses more than younger horses, or does it make any difference? Like extremely hot or colder days? As a human being, I know that the extremes are bothering me a lot more, so I just wondered if older horses go off for them quicker with temperature extremes.
Well, I can understand what you're saying about colder weather bothers you when you get older because things don't work right. I used to be out in the wintertime like now hauling hay with a short sleeve shirt on when I was a kid. Now, days I freeze to death. I win the Gold Cup here in Omaha with a horse called Jockum. I win the Hawthorne Gold Cup with a horse called Almost Grown. And I run them in New York at Aqueduct in a stake race, and it was like 30 below zero. And it ruined both those horses. I mean, as far as they were never the same after that. And real cold weather, I will never race another horse in it. We used to play football when we were kids when it was cold, you know. And before you got done running and stuff, your lungs would feel like they were on fire. It does a horse the same way. Extreme cold. If it gets down below 20 degrees, I won't run a horse anymore in that kind of weather. The heat, some horses take heat, just like human beings, better than others. Some horses become non-sweaters in the real hot weather. So you got to keep them from doing that. But there is horses that become non-sweaters from overheat. It's the cold weather, I'm not for it a bit when they run. I ruined two just by that in New York. Yes, sir.
Hi, Jack. I used to live on the West Coast when I was United Airlines. Every time I go to track, I would see you with this younger trainer. Lauren or Larry or...
Lauren Rotelli.
Yeah, whatever happened to him, he just kind of disappeared all of a sudden.
He had Lauren went on his own in California. He had a guy sue him over a horse one time. And him and my veterinary, Dr. Warren, is an old veterinary, sued them both. Lauren got so upset with that guy suing him over that horse that he never did show. He just quit the race, he quit training, and he's in the financial business now, helping people with insurance and doing things for him. His brother Richard still galloped horses for my dad, still rides quarter horse races yet and trains horses. He, in fact, broke a 2-year-old filly for me, a street cry filly, this last summer Richard did. But Lauren lives in Glendora, California. And I haven't seen him. He called me here a while back, but I haven't seen him for a while. But just got so disgusted with racing over that deal that he quit and just left the racetrack.
One of the fans asked Jack a question that was hard to understand on the live recording of the session due to very low volume, so I'll repeat it here. Jack, I also remember a horse you trained named Roses Jim. Whatever happened to that horse?
Roses Jim, I can tell you a couple stories about Roses Jim. We had Roses Jim in Chicago as a 2-year-old. Dad had him there, and he was an ornery little devil. In fact, he throwed the Jock down between the railroad tracks between Hawthorne and Sportsman one day. We brought him home that winter and give him time off. And right here at Exarban, I got him ready to run as a 3-year-old. He was 30-1, and I wanted to bet on him. Leon Hall, that's been the outrider and trained horses here, Leon took him to the gate for me that day. I don't bet but 10, $10, $20. But anyway, I bet on him, and I come back out. He was still 25, 30 to 1, and I bet another $10 on him. And I walked back out, and he was still 20 to 1. I bet another $10, and I walked out back out the third time, and there he goes running loose down the racetrack. He threw Mundorf off and got loose from the pony and run off. And the time we got him back in his next race, he was 8 to 5 because everybody knew about him then. That horse, you talk about competitive, when he got beat, he'd come back to the stall and he'd kick the stall. He'd be so damn mad. He wasn't the greatest horse in the country, but if any one of them made a mistake, he would beat him. In fact, when he was 9 years old, my dad ran him for claim at Sportsman Park. And Mom and Dad were staying at the Sahara Inn. And my mom got mad at Dad, and he always got to do what he wanted until she got mad. But she told Dad that day, she said, if somebody claims that horse, don't come home because you got no place to stay tonight, I'll tell you that. A little horse set a track record at Sportsman Park that day when he was 9 years old. And nobody claimed him, so Dad got to sleep that night anyway. So. But he was a good horse.
Got another question back there.
Hey, Jack. Thanks for being here. I just want your opinion on the future of Nebraska racing, if there ever will be a new track, and what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think, like I told you, the start of this thing, and I don't know whether you're here, the greatest fans are right here in the Midwest, and the most fun I ever had racing was the folks in here in the Midwest, in Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, and everywhere. But to have a racetrack, I think you got to have people with the greatest food there is, so they got good food where you don't rip them off. And if they would have a track here and even give them a fair chance where they had slot machines and where they can bet on races, you know, off-track betting. You know, one time, Exarvin was third in the country as far as racing. That's how good they were here. And I think that if they would get a racetrack here, just give them slot machines at the track, give us an even break. That's all we need, just an even thing to play with. They'd still go to the top of the chart again. I really do believe that. And that's what we need to do. And I think the citizens of Nebraska, if somebody would get out and get to talk to them and explain to them what it could mean for the state, for all the people, for your tax and everything, why do we let people go across the state line, leave our country, go over to them places in Iowa? They're all Nebraska cars over there gambling anyway. So you got to fight fire with fire. Why can't we have the same?
Jack, can you give us a little insight in that first race? And I've never been to Keeneland, and I'm not that great as a handicapper, but there's a horse in there that somebody paid $875,000 for at the Keeneland sale in L.A. Can you tell us, you know, you see this every once in a while, more and more, where there's just an astronomical sum of money paid. What goes through those folks' head out there in Keeneland, and how do you see that happen, having most of us never been there?
Well, let me tell you this much. How would you like to have one that you raised, buy nothing, out of nothing, and not too much anyway, but you think you can run a little bit, and you get in a claiming race, a maiden claiming race in California for $32,000, and you got about two or three of these in there that these trainers, that they give from $150,000 to $700,000 for, and here they're in there with you. You know, the horse had to look good, and I don't think anybody's smart enough after two starts or three starts to tell you what a horse is worth. You know, you got to give them some horses like human beings. You see these kids go to high school and they're a little clumsy. The time they get to college, they're great football players. And some of them are great in high school and they don't make it the rest of the way. Horses are the same way. And these guys, these trainers, it's nothing for them to take a horse that costs $600,000 to $700,000 and the third start, he's in for a claiming race. I know this much. If you give me $2 million a year, I can win the Derby every year picking out my horses to buy. And I don't have to buy them for $1 million because I do have a good eye for a horse. I picked out Ali Sheba, and they all turned him down. Their pedigree men and all turned him down. And I begged Mrs. Scarborough to buy him $500,000. And all, he was skinny. He was thin. Lucas sat there and told the Scarboroughs, I quit bidding on him when I seen you bidding on him. Well, you couldn't have stuck a knife in Lucas and made him buy that skinny horse. They didn't have a butt that big and dapples all over him and on steroids, he wouldn't buy one. As my father always said, you can take the best-looking horse, fat, slick, and get him skinny, and take the ugliest-looking horse and get him fat, and the ugly one will bring more than the good horse. And he always said, fat's the best color in the world. You got to see, when you're looking at a horse, you got to see what he'll develop into. He's got to have a hind quarter on him. He's got to have a loin on him. Don't matter how fat he is. You got to see what comes up on him. Ali Sheba, when we bought him, he was raised the right way. You could count his ribs. Like I say, he's in his everyday clothes. That's, he ain't dressed up in a suit. Gordon Huntley would tell you, buying them yearlings out of Keeneland's just like the day you get married. Your bride never looks no better than she does the day you marry her. And that's what you say about them yearlings in the sale when you buy them. They're all, you know, dressed up and shiny and everything, and they never look no better to you.
think we have another question here from Fred.
You've mentioned some of the people that you've worked with that were up-and-coming trainers or that you and your father worked with. Who are some of the top horsemen that you helped bring up into training today?
Well, I've taken Billy Mott. He came out of South Dakota, was galloping horses for me. He was with me about 5 years. And Billy was a good horseman. Started out, we had some problems with him. Billy getting started, a young kid like any young kid. Frankie Brothers was a good horse. The little boy Wayne Catalano's been a trainer in Chicago, the leading trainer. He started when he was 14. They kicked him out of school. His mother brought his brother to me when he was in trouble. And first thing I know, Wayne's 14. He got booted out of school for blowing the doors off the lockers in the hall. Same up there, and he's running bets for Lonnie Rand, them jocks. Dickie Winnett, them at Sportsman Park, and carrying around pockets full of money. And I called his mother. I said, you got to sign this boy over to me because he's going to end up no good, which she did. I had his brother Joe working for me. And he's a good horseman, real good horseman, good claiming trainer, and a good horseman. I've had some good people. Kevin Wright over here stood up, told us about Ice and Joy Bob. He started me. I half raised him, and I got the most beautiful letter for him. He's very successful in the glass business here in Omaha. And he used to think I was the meanest man in the world because I made him work, but I got a beautiful letter from him to tell me how grateful he was that I taught him work ethics. And that's what my father taught me, was work ethics. If you don't work, and it's like nowadays, the way the government is, when a kid's 11, 12 years old, you need to be teaching him how to work. Nowadays, they don't want you to let you work till you're 16 years old. Well, hell, when you're 16, you start looking at the girls start looking at the boys, you know? You got to learn to work before that when you're young. I've had some awful good young people, Don Winfrey, but like my dad taught me everything, and I've tried to pass that on to people who work for me.
On the next podcast in this series, Jack Van Berg talks about training horses to race at different distances. What made Bobby Frankel so special? Match races. What racing can do to attract more fans. And wraps up our podcast series with a handicapping angle for first-time starters that he picked up from a handicapper at the track. Be sure to tell your racing friends about Handicapping.com's free podcasts. This podcast was made possible with the permission of Horseman's Park, Omaha, Nebraska. www.horsemanspark.com. Copyright 2010 by Handicapping.com. All rights reserved.